You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe New Mexican and radiocafe.org, where you can contact us at any time. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte. I'm very happy now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe, Chef Johnny V.
Whoa!
He's director of the cooking school at Las Cosas, and we're here for the second year in a row, and I hope there will be many years to come.
I love it. I'd love to be an annual returner to the show.
Yeah, we're here to talk about Thanksgiving dinner. Now, do you have any Thanksgiving dinner memories from your childhood?
You know, we probably would have maybe 12 or 14 people every year. So we probably had a 24-pound turkey. Somehow, many years running, a couple of years running, the turkey was not completely thawed when it went in the oven. So we would pull it out, and it would look all brown on top, and we'd start carving it. And then you get sort of halfway in, and there would be like frozen, uncooked turkey. So we'd go, okay, we're going to carve off part of it and put it back in the oven. Many years, the packet of giblets was discovered in the middle of the turkey as we carved it, which many people still do.
Right.
Yeah, my family were not necessarily great cooks. So I think that's what inspired me to go into cooking, is to, you know, break my family heritage of not coming from a long line of cooks. But I think, and my dad would get up at like 6 a.m. and get the turkey going. I think we would eat earlier than most people. Now I think 4 o'clock is more, you know.
Right.
So you don't have to get cooking all day long. But 26, 28-pound turkeys take forever to cook.
They do take a long time to cook. Now, one of the things that we always talk about is how you calculate the cooking time per pound. Is there a rule for that?
I think it's 20 minutes per pound.
Something like that. But it varies depending on whether you cook in the stuffing.
Yeah. And I was, you know, it's so funny, all the food blogs I get online and stuff, because I'm a chef, you know, talk about 10 new ways to cook a turkey, and brine or no brine, and butter or no butter and stuff. And I'm like, it's still a riot that people are still discussing the new way to make a turkey, which is basically still the old way. And the brining idea, you know, people are buying Amish turkeys and heritage turkeys and stuff. And some of those turkeys that are raised, you know, more free range and stuff, never get as fat as like a butterball turkey.
Right.
So they're kind of scraggly, you know, and they're drier. So you kind of do need to brine them. But when you think about like a butterball turkey, if you buy a big fat butterball turkey, those are injected with a brine. So those are usually pretty moist.
I think with the heritage turkey, and by the time people listen to this, it'll be too late to get their heritage turkey, because the vast majority of those have to be ordered. And the fact is, most turkeys are industrially raised turkeys.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to make this show about the industrial meat system.
Yeah.
But it's a lot better eventually to transition over to the heritage turkeys and learn what you have to do differently. To cook them, to make them moist and delicious, because they will be moist, and they will probably be more delicious because they are raised naturally.
Yeah, they're eating real food. They're eating real things. And even the idea of fresh to frozen, I mean, you have to plan in advance, because if you think, oh, I'm going to go pick up a fresh turkey on Tuesday, even for Christmas, you're going to be surprised. Most of the turkeys are frozen, and it takes 3 or 4 days to thaw them.
That's right.
It's tricky, but I'm kind of a traditionalist. Like, I've done turkey classes in the past, and we did a Cuban turkey. We did a turkey with a mole dry rub, which was kind of interesting. It had chilies and cocoa and stuff, and it was good, but I still think at the end of the day, you want, like, give me the traditional turkey, you know.
So let's talk about the traditional turkey for a moment.
Yeah.
You've got your turkey. You've gotten it far enough in advance that it's thawed. It's Thanksgiving morning. You do not have to get up at 4 a.m. or even 6 a.m.
Yeah.
Even 8 a.m., you might roll out of bed and have your caffeinated beverage and so on. What's the first thing you do? What's your turkey prep?
Well, I like to think about, for the rest of the dishes, planning in advance. So some of that stuff can be made in advance, maybe even frozen, and then, you know, warmed up to serve. Anytime you entertain, if you have to spend the whole day in the kitchen, and then when people arrive, you're like exhausted and the kitchen's a mess, you know. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of things you can make in advance. I'm also a big fan of pressure cookers, and we at Las Cosas sell these amazing pressure cookers that you can make. I have a recipe for like 6-minute mashed potatoes.
I'm glad you were not talking about pressure cooking a turkey.
Yeah, no. Or frying a turkey.
If people do that.
We do love to look online and watch people's house. Well, it's not fun to watch their house burn down, but sometimes it's their portal burns down from them deep frying a turkey. So
yeah.
That's dangerous.
Do not do this at home.
No, yeah.
In fact, do not do it.
Yeah. I mean, I've never had one. Somebody said they really wanted to try it, and I'm like, yeah, it's going to taste like fried chicken. So, yeah, if you want to. But planning in advance, and then maybe the day of the party, the day of Thanksgiving, the only thing you really do have to worry about is getting the turkey ready. And I'm sort of a traditional melted butter with fresh sage and salt and pepper and maybe fresh thyme and some garlic. And I always roast it without the stuffing. I think, you know, that years ago was a problem for safety because they said the stuffing kept the inside of the turkey too cool. But, you know, I always, you know, I don't mind doing the stuffing on the side.
I have to say, I have always cooked the stuffing in the turkey, and I have lived to tell the tale.
Yeah,
nobody's ever gotten sick.
No, yeah.
And it's delicious because the juices of the turkey go into the stuffing.
Yeah, and they say you can even take the stuffing out halfway through. And then let it, you know, that's already got the flavor in there. I usually put like a couple of lemons and maybe a whole onion in the turkey and stuff. But yeah, I think the days.
Just in the cavity where the stuffing would otherwise
would
be.
Yeah. And I think those days, you don't hear about, you know, people being. Although in Rochester, where I grew up a couple of years ago, there was a Chinese restaurant that did a Thanksgiving dinner that people could, you know, in the community, and like 65 people got sick.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know if it was from the stuffing, but anyway. But yeah, I think you and I were just talking before we started that be careful if you decide to do a wild and crazy non-traditional turkey theme, because some of your guests might be like, I don't want Tunisian turkey special turkey tagine on Thanksgiving. I want turkey, but I mean, or maybe take a couple of the side dishes and give them a spin. Like I'll make maybe green chili mashed potatoes and, you know.
Yeah, it wouldn't be New Mexico if you didn't have green chili on something at Thanksgiving.
Yeah, or red chili something. But you and I were talking about manicotti before, and my Italian friends, they make turkey and stuffing, mashed potatoes, sweet potatoes, green beans, and then a lasagna or manicotti. And it's like, or stuffed shells. And it's like, oh my God, how much can we? I wonder what the average calorie count is on a Thanksgiving dinner.
Well, especially on an Italian Thanksgiving dinner. I mean, I grew up, my dad was Sicilian-American, and his parents and all the other relatives were from Sicily.
Oh, my God.
And I was this skinny little child and would show up. And first there would be the antipasto, which was, you know, salamis
and pepperoni and mozzarella.
Right, and all kinds of cheese. And then you would go to the first dish, which would be pasta and lentils, a kind of soup.
Yeah.
And by the time you got to the main meal, I was full and couldn't eat another bite. And then there was the main meal with any number of sides, whether it was Thanksgiving or Christmas or Easter. And then there would be desserts. And then there would be nuts.
Oh, yeah.
And coffee. And then they would all clear off the table and play poker.
Oh, my God. I love that.
But that's
traditional. Traditional American. Yeah, the pilgrims and the Indians did play poker on that first Thanksgiving.
Yeah, so I've heard.
Yeah. You don't read about it that much.
But. No, but it's Thanksgiving is a meal where I think portion control is probably a good idea. So if you're going to do 10 courses or even 5 courses, make the little soup kind of small.
And not too, And if you think about it, most of the sides we have are carb loaded, you know. Sweet potatoes and yams and butternut squash soup and, you know, so I try to do if I do like hors d'oeuvre thing when people arrive, you know, like little crostini with a little bit of tomato basil sauce or something. Or people do shrimp cocktail. I think we're having shrimp cocktail this week and my friend's just so cute.
That's very nice.
Did you ever hear about, I don't think we've talked about this. NPR every week, probably last week it would have been on, a correspondent from NPR named Susan Stamberg.
Yeah, Susan Stamberg.
Her mother always made a cranberry relish that I made last year. And it's been written about because it sounds awful and you either love it or hate it. I actually love it. So if you look it up, I was going to bring the recipe, but I forgot. It's very simple. It's cranberries, a chopped onion, sugar, sour cream, and horseradish. So it's certainly...
I'm sorry, you lost me at onion.
Yeah. So it's sweet and savory, and it's raw cranberries put in the food processor with sugar, sour cream.
Which you can get frozen.
You can get frozen. And like 2 tablespoons of extra hot horseradish. Then the crazy thing is you freeze it in a mold and then take it out the morning of Thanksgiving and just put it in the fridge. And it's served on the side like cranberries. But it's delicious. It's also delicious on a turkey sandwich. So Mama Stanberg's cranberry relish. And if you take it to your friends, they'll either love you or hate you for it. But
I mean, that sounds horrible,
yeah,
Johnny.
Yeah. And really my is. Mother used to make for Thanksgiving and Christmas, and I still throw up a little bit when I think about it, a Jell-O mold with, I think they make cranberry Jell-O during the holidays, like Jell-O in a box with cranberries in it. And then she made little balls of cream cheese rolled in chopped walnuts that were floating in the Jell-O. But every once in a while, you would get a mouthful of cream cheese. Like, mwah. You know, like 2 tablespoons of cream cheese in your mouth. And when I still see any Jell-O mold.
And this is why you go, this is why you went into chefery.
Yes, yeah. And whenever I have to use Jell-O in a recipe, I'm like, no, I can't use it. But
well, it's a 50s thing.
Oh, yeah. And I, you know, I grew up, yeah. You know, the first cooking class I ever did at Las Cosas was based on a cookbook called The Last Meal on the Titanic. Somebody wrote a book, and they actually got the recipes from the shipping company. They were published. And I always thought, oh, my God, what they ate in first class, their 10-course meal. Imagine trying to survive the cold, icy waters after eating 10 courses and being in a tuxedo. But in those days, Jell-O, what was that, 1915? Jell-O was considered a luxury dish because it was a very expensive to make.
I didn't know it existed as early
yeah,
as that.
Yeah, around that time. Because, you know, it was coming from horse hooves that had to be rendered and stuff. And on the Titanic, do you know what green chartreuse is? It's the most horrific aperitif. It's like a bitter, but you drink it usually after dinner, but it is so medicinal. And they had, as a course, a green chartreuse Jell-O as one of the courses. So for this cooking class, I bought a $45 bottle of green chartreuse and made Jell-O out of it. And it was awful, but it was authentic. Anyway, we got off the course. Yeah.
In 1897, in Leroy, New York, carpenter and cough syrup manufacturer Pearl Bixby Waite trademarked a gelatin dessert called Jell-O.
Oh, there we go. And I'm from upstate New York, so that's interesting.
All right. So we
don't
got really sidetracked.
Yeah,
don't do
the Jell-O mold. Don't do the cranberry or the balls of cream cheese. Yeah.
Now, I want to go back to the turkey.
Yeah.
How do you preheat the oven? To what temperature?
You know, I think there's two schools of thought. I think the more traditional one is like 350, and it's in there longer. So that 350 is probably the 20 minutes per pound sort of thing. If you do it too hot, the outside's going to get done too quick, and the inside's not going to get done, you know. I think the new temperature, I think it's still, you want the fattest part of the thigh to be like 160. You do want it to rest before you try to carve it, so the juices go back into the meat, because when it first comes out, if you cut it into it, all the juices will run out, just like with beef.
A meat thermometer is a really good investment.
So important.
You can save a lot of trouble. You can not end up like Johnny V's parents, putting the half-frozen, half-cooked turkey back into the oven.
Yeah. And also, I always say, make sure your oven temperature is, make sure your oven is accurate.
Yeah.
Because if it's not 350 and you've set it at 350, you're going to be guessing. And it's, you know, they say, oh, wait till the juices run clear, but
Will your meat thermometer help you? Can you just put it in the oven and it'll measure?
Well, technically, the meat thermometer won't go as high as, like, you know, meat thermometers might only go up to 200. Okay. But your oven thermometer, which you would buy separately, would be go up to 450. Say.
So you can buy an oven thermometer, ladies and gentlemen. And these things are not going to break the bank. Yeah.
West Coast sells a bunch of different.
Very good to know. It's good. One of the things that one forgets is that a lot of ovens either were never very well calibrated in the first place, or they lose that over time.
Well, and you know, in the old days, you could turn a screw in the oven and calibrate it. Now I think it's a computer in there, and you've got to get it calibrated. So.
Right, right. Okay, so then you cook it. Now, do you baste? Do you use the proverbial turkey baster?
I know. I saw a woman at Los Cosas the other day coming in to get one of those, and she said, I don't even know what these are called. And I said, well, it's a turkey baster. And like, how do I use it? Yeah, I think that's probably the traditional way. You will see recipes that I have done where you soak cheesecloth in your marinade, whether it's butter and herbs and stuff, and then lay the cheesecloth over the turkey. And then it kind of, that's soaked with that butter. That will keep it nice and moist and brown, you know.
When do you take it off?
Well, it'll come off easily at the end. It sort of comes right off.
With a lot of the flavor, though.
Well, hopefully that's gone through it, yeah. Also, you know, Las Cosas sells duck fat, and I have used duck fat or goose fat to marinate and glaze my turkey. And the cool thing about that, it absolutely turns your turkey the most gorgeous golden color. I don't know what the difference, why that does because of the difference in the fat, but oh my God. You know, probably some people use olive oil, but I think butter's got more of a browning.
I've used bacon fat.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Bacon fat. And I've seen turkeys strung with bacon.
I've done that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No,
there's so many ways to do it. It's kind of fun.
You have to be careful to not burn the bacon off. I'm not sure, like a little tin foil for a while or something like that.
Yeah.
All right. So you've got your turkey and that's the main thing that you have to do on Thanksgiving. Although what I do is put the turkey in the oven and then start the apple pie or whatever pie you're making. I tend to make apple pie you do your pie crust. And by the time you get all that other stuff done, your turkey's coming out of the oven sooner and then as soon as the turkey comes out, you put
the pie
in so that it's nice and hot when you get ready to eat dessert.
And timing is important because, you know, are people ready to eat? What time are you going to eat and stuff? So it's tricky. Or sometimes you could bake some of those other things off first. Let them cool down. Your green bean casserole, which apparently is still the number one most repeated recipe in America, which I love. American, we're famous for green bean casserole. I think green bean casserole is like the most repeated dish in America, which is so funny. And, you know, when I grew up, everybody used canned green beans, mushroom soup, jerky onions. And what I do in my cooking classes, we make real green beans. We make a wild mushroom sauce using dried porcini mushrooms. We use those great fried shallots that you get in Asian markets and put them on top. And so it's still got that same flavor, but it's without all the...
And it probably tastes so much better.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, mushroom soup is like... I grew up on Campbell's soup and pretty much everything I ever add. Which is why I have high blood pressure now. Thank you.
So we've got turkey. We've got the green bean casserole side. Of course, you can make mashed potatoes. You can make sweet potatoes. You can make them mashed, which is fairly easy. You can also...
Marshmallows.
Johnny, stop it.
I know, really. I am a child of the 60s. Right.
What are some other side dishes? Salad at Thanksgiving doesn't seem to be that common, although I think I'm going to make one this year.
You know, I like an apple cranberry salad, maybe something a little more, what's that, like a Waldorf with grapes and stuff might be nice. Usually you have some sort of rolls. You know, I just saw a recipe online this morning for really yummy looking dinner rolls that are brushed with butter when they come out and stuff. But I like that because all those things can be done in advance. And then, you know, I've seen, like, you know, recipes for quinoa. And we should mention, what do you do if you've got vegetarian friends coming, which we all do have, of course.
What do you do?
What do you do? So, you know, you don't want to just say, well, you get to have all the side dishes. You know, you want to take into consideration.
You got to give them some protein.
Yeah, yeah. But something with beans, maybe a bean, white bean casserole or some black bean, yummy something. And it might be nice to make it obviously delicious enough that everybody could have some. You know, don't just say, here's your little portion of it. I was kidding a friend of mine this morning who's vegetarian about, did you order your tofurkey yet? You know, and apparently there is like a tofu turkey.
I've heard.
I wonder if it looks like a turkey. Does it look like a turkey?
I've never seen it.
We should look up to see if we can. I don't know. I don't know if I want something that looks like a turkey and is like white and solid. And
I am now looking at Google Images, and no, it does not look like a turkey. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Sigh of relief.
Yeah. But, you know, all those great flavors that we love with Thanksgiving, you know, be careful because a lot of stuffing recipes call for chicken stock. So make sure if you've got vegetarian friends coming, make your stuffing with vegetable stock. Make your green beans with vegetable stock.
Are there any special things that you do with your mashed potatoes and sweet potatoes to give them a little extra flavor?
I like the green chili thing. I do red chili with sweet potatoes and green chili with regular white potatoes and
nice.
Stuff, you know, just fold them in as you're making them. You know, many New Mexicans, of course, serve red chili sauce as their, we call it gravy, right? You know, so you'd have your regular turkey gravy and then you'd have your New Mexico red chili sauce on the side too. So,
and you can, if you have enough pan drippings, which you probably will if you follow Johnny's instructions.
Oh, yeah.
You can have a couple of different gravy dishes.
Yeah.
Some people will mix their gravy with flour and have the drippings with flour and have a traditional pan gravy.
Yeah.
I like to pour the drippings straight into a little gravy pitcher and that's it.
Okay.
So you're
so
pouring
it's the juice. Yeah.
Salty fat over your meat.
Sounds good to me. Yeah, gravy. I'm not a big fan of gravy if it looks like pudding, if it's too thick. I like pan juices. And, you know, you can take off a little bit of the fat, but as we know, fat is flavor and stuff. And then I think once you're all full of all of that, give people time to digest stuff before you do dessert. I remember a couple of Christmases ago, I had a friend from England who at Christmas, after we had this huge meal, brought out like this cheese board with cheese and nuts and figs and dates and grapes. And she's like, okay, we have to have our cheese course before dessert. And we were all like, oh my God. And I don't think any of us touched it. And she was so upset because she put together this, you know, this beautiful spread. But yeah. And then of course we have pumpkin. Now I'm going to go on record for saying I hate pumpkin pie.
Okay. It's
love pecan pie. Pumpkin pie, I don't know. There probably is some yummy recipe out there using condensed milk that would make it. You know, like people make flan with milk or with evaporated milk. But when you have a flan with condensed milk, it's like delicious.
Sweetened condensed milk is very decadent and very delicious.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's in Vietnamese coffee and Thai iced tea and stuff. So, yeah, so I probably will never be a skinny chef, but you know
I wouldn't trust a skinny chef.
Yeah, I think that hopefully that won't be on my tombstone, but anyway. It never did.
So there's other desserts besides pumpkin pie, and you can do lots of different things with the spices in pumpkin pie.
And I love like cinnamon and nutmeg and stuff. In one of my classes, I actually make a spiced butternut squash soup that doesn't taste like pumpkin pie. It's got cumin in it, nutmeg, a little bit of clove. So it steers the flavor away from the pumpkin pie and makes it, and red chili in there. So it makes it more savory, you know, so.
So what about apple pie and pecan pie and so on?
Any special hints
for those?
Yeah, the tricky thing about apple pie is getting the crust on the bottom done. So they say you should always bake an apple pie in the lower third of the oven.
Oh, good to know.
You know, years ago, I had a wonderful baker teach classes on pies, and she always sauteed her apples first to not to cook them through, but to get rid of some of the moisture and shrink them a little bit. Then you could mound more in your apple pie crust And then when you cut it, you know, often if you put raw apples in an apple pie and cover it with crust on top, when you bake it, the apples shrink down and then there's a 3-inch space between the top crust and the apples. And she would saute them for 10 minutes, get some of the moisture out, and then fill up more. And oh my God, it was full right to the...
Very interesting. So yeah. More apples. Another thing, one of the very first things I did when I started in radio was interviewed some people who'd written a book called Pie in the Sky. And it was about high altitude
and
baking.
We sell that book. And it's Susan Purdy. And she tested her recipes at sea level, 3,000 feet, 5,000 feet, 7,000 feet, and 10,000 feet.
Yeah.
And we sell that at Las Cosas. It's an amazing book. But when she taught for me probably three times, and the way she tested egg whites as to whether they were whipped enough is she would turn the bowl over her assistant's head. And if it fell out onto the assistant's head, they weren't stiff enough.
How often did they fall out?
We never fell out, but we were watching thinking, oh my God, yeah.
That's hilarious.
So that's an amazing cookbook.
Well, and one of the things that I learned from that, because I had always, before I lived in Santa Fe many, many years ago, I had learned to make apple pie and, you know, the real standard pie crust. I mean, white flour, shortening, a little bit of butter, pastry blender, roll it out, the whole thing. And it's a delicious, easy, light, flaky pie crust. It always works at sea level. But what happens with the apples is because water boils at a lower temperature here, they don't cook as well.
Yeah,
and so you have to sauteing them, I'd never heard of that.
Yeah.
I steam them.
Oh, interesting.
Just a little bit, and also use a softer apple. So instead of using your Granny Smith.
Which are so traditional, yeah.
You can steam your Granny Smith, which is probably the best idea, or use a slightly softer apple, steam it a little bit. Don't steam it till they're mushy, because then your pie will be an apple mush pie.
Yeah.
And I will give you my secret, which isn't a secret anymore because I've said it so many times during our Thanksgiving shows, but I always soak the apples in rum and brandy.
Ooh.
And
when they're raw.
Yeah, you core them, you peel them, you cut them up, and then while you're making the pie crust, you are soaking them in rum and brandy, and it's delicious, and nobody can ever tell.
I've never heard that. That's so cool.
Yeah, it was from a church cookbook that I found when I was a teenager, and it's you can imagine the church ladies who had that rum and brandy on hand.
Yeah. For what purpose? Just for the apple pie.
The apple pie, no doubt, but... And nobody knows that it's rum and brandy. They're just saying, oh, what a delicious apple pie.
Yeah.
And I instead of making a top crust, just use a kind of streusel crumb crust.
I'm more of a streusel crust top guy, too. I think there's some, you know, after having that carb-loading meal, if you have an apple pie with two crusts, it's like... And I do love pecan pie, but oh, my God, it's so rich and sweet. And
so during Thanksgiving dinner, you eat your... appetizers and maybe a starter course, or maybe you go straight into the turkey or sides. What do you do? Do you get up and walk the dogs?
Yeah,
you take a little constitutional?
usually have to have a nap. No, I know. Yeah, it'd be a good idea. That's why I think it is becoming more popular to do it in the afternoon. So if you start at 4 o'clock, you're maybe have a little bit of turkey before you go to bed, but you know, not like if you start eating at 7, you know, you're going to be in trouble when it gets time to go to bed.
So you take your little break, then you have your dessert. What about drinks?
Yeah, you know, I think probably, well, two schools of thought. I'm sort of a Pinot Noir guy with turkey. Certainly don't want a heavy red. I think a rosé champagne is kind of a little traditional at this time of year, you know, where it's got a little bit of blush on it and stuff. Remember to have some interesting drinks for people that don't drink, you know, rather than just here's your sparkling water, happy Thanksgiving, you know, maybe come up with a punch or
apple cider with cinnamon.
And yummy. I love, my God, apple cider at this time of year is so good. And the kiddies, we don't want to be giving the kiddies champagne and stuff, you know.
No. Although I have to say the Italians, they start you early with coffee and wine.
Yeah.
And
Did they dilute the wine a little bit?
Yeah. Yep, they dilute it, and
I think you respect it more if you're
well, and you don't it's not taboo.
Yeah.
And so you don't end up abusing it.
Yeah, you're not being told don't.
I've tapered off of alcohol altogether, not for any reason except that I get hungover within about 10 minutes of the first glass.
Yeah, it doesn't feel so good
It doesn't feel so good anymore, unfortunately, because it's a lovely tradition. Yeah. But so it's good to have some alternatives. Yeah. And of course, your sparkling water, if you've got little citrus wedges to put in it, is not the worst thing either.
You are some floats, some cranberries in it. Also remember, if you've got out-of-town guests, that at 7,000 feet, one drink is worth three the first couple of days. So watch watch Aunt Mary from Boston with her with her third glass of champagne.
And you're going to want to hydrate those guests.
Yeah.
Before we go, I think we've kind of covered Thanksgiving dinner.
What about eggnog? Are you an eggnog fan?
Not really. Tell me about eggnog.
I love it, I love it.
I thought that was a New Year's thing.
Yeah, well, it comes out now in Thanksgiving, or it comes out in October now.
Okay.
But no, I usually gain 2 or 3 pounds every time eggnog comes out, because I'm like, I think it's too much. I think you don't want don't do eggnog on Thanksgiving. It's too much.
Okay. Yeah. So
we'll skip the eggnog.
We'll do a New Year's show.
We'll talk about eggnog. Yeah.
Now, last thing, try not to talk politics too much over Thanksgiving dinner, because it interferes with the digestion if you're really not on the same page.
Yeah, I agree. That's so true. When I do my cooking classes, I ask my guests, my students, I say, I'd love all of your opinion about red or green. And then I make a little joke that said, I used to ask people red or blue, but now I just strictly stick it to red or green. So if you're going to talk any colors at dinner, ask them red or green.
There you go.
Right.
Johnny V, anything else before we go?
No, I think these turbulent times, I think this year is going to be a really important time to be thankful for what we've got. I feel very vulnerable and emotional about what's going on in the world, you know, and then you're like, yeah, that we really need to have a good holiday season, and we need to be nicer to each other. And we, you know, and it sounds cliche, but you know, Thanksgiving is really about giving thanks and kind of try to remember the reason for the season, sort of thing, you know.
And whatever the checkered origins of Thanksgiving might be, I think many of us use it, I certainly know that I do, as a non-commercial holiday where it's not about gift giving or anything else. It's really about food and friendship. And let's leave it at that.
And family. And you know, my family are all in Rochester, New York, so I'll be celebrating with my Santa Fe family. But, and also think about, if you know anybody that's an orphan out here, make sure to invite them to your table. What's that wonderful new quote on Facebook? If you have more food than you need, build a bigger table. Is that the latest meme? Is that what they're called?
Haven't heard it, but yeah.
I love it. Like, if you've got more than you need, build a bigger table.
Yeah.
You know.
Johnny V is the director of the cooking program at Las Cosas.
20 years in March this next year.
Oh, great. Congratulations.
Thank you. Oh, my God.
And Las Cosas is a terrific cooking store in the DeVargas Mall here in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Check it out if you haven't. And Johnny V, thanks so much for being with us.
So great to be here. I love our new tradition.
Yes, indeed. You've been listening to The Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte. This program is brought to you in part by Dotfoil Computer Services, providing computer repair and business services for Apple and PC. They're Santa Fe's only Apple-authorized service provider. You can find them on the web at dotfoil.com and in the Candyman Center in Santa Fe. This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican, an independent newspaper since 1849. The New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of The Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send any feedback on the show, ideas, or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.